Last week, Marianne and I went out to dinner. As I normally do, I start talking to the people next to us. And they were just back from a trip to Canada. And they went to this brewery that does Moose Drool. And but he couldn't remember the name. And I couldn't remember the name. I'm like, what is the name of that beer that they do up there? And I mean, I talked to him for like 10 minutes and they went to their table and Marianne goes, Moose Drool. And I go, oh, that's it. So I was walking to our table. I stopped and I go, Moose Drool. And the guy's all, what? And I said, the beer that you're trying to think of. And his wife goes, yeah, it was nice to meet you. And I go, I'm sorry. I'm that guy.
The message received. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, instantly, I told Marianne, and she's just, that's probably the funniest thing she ever heard. She just kept laughing at me.
We are talking about Ephesians week 11, unified in calling, conduct, and confession in chapter 4.
Yeah.
This new chapter.
I know. So here's the thing. We're actually going to slow down a lot more now because everything that we've talked about now becomes really practical. And Paul really does go back here talking about the church and us as a people coming together around Christ, because that's how it works. And all the theology that we learn practically starts to work its way out in our lives and how we live and love with one another. Paul will say, you know, I beseech you to live in a manner worthy of your calling. And that means really to, he's begging, he's pleading them for to take what he has said and begin to live this out. And so he will talk about how we do this first off with all humility, which the NIV will say to be completely humble. And each of these things he talks about really comes back to the idea of pride, that we only live this way if we can get pride removed from our life. And pride is, I'd say, the great bane of everybody's existence. And this is really what goes and pushes directly against our own humbleness, is our own pride. Then Paul will go humbleness, you need gentleness. And the reason we don't live in gentleness, again, is because of our pride. We are the ones who get offended by others. We don't want to offer a kindness back towards them. And then that goes into with patience. And the reason we're not patient is that we have too much pride. I will use this illustration in the message about how I do not like to wait for anything. And that my wife works in the ER and she does not give me preferential treatment, but I want it. I don't like to be patient, and it's nice to always know somebody so you get in earlier. But my wife is probably the fairest person I have ever met in my life, and it drives me nuts because she doesn't care about my feelings when she just wants to be fair. And then patience leads to bearing with one another in love, and we will not do that again if pride rears its ugly head. And this is why I think Paul takes so much time walking through the gospel, understanding what the gospel is, because the gospel will drive a death nail into pride when we fully understand it. And this is why at the end, Paul brings it all together about, you know, the bond of peace centered around Christ. He will say there is one body, and that's the church, and one spirit. It's God's spirit, as you're called to one hope that belongs to your call, one Lord, that's Jesus. And I really hope Saban's there on the morning, so I can go, who is it, Saban? He can go, Jesus, and he can actually say it, because that's the good place for it. One faith, Christianity, one baptism, conversion, and one Father of all who is over all. And again, it goes back to the Trinity. God's triuneness is a perfect example of what he is calling us to be as the church. Not unity for the sake of getting along, not unity for the sake of ourselves, but unity for the sake that God is lifted up, his glory is shown, and his people walk in his goodness and grace.
Why is it so hard besides pride? Because I'm not prideful. Why is it so hard?
Why is it so hard for other people?
That's right.
To be like other
people.
You.
Other people just to, really struggle.
Yeah, to be like you and get rid of that pride. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very hard for God's people to not, God's people, anybody, to not easily fall back into pride. And that's why we got to keep coming back to the gospel, that we do it in community, reminding one another of the gospel, because that is what teaches us that we ourselves need to be saved, and we are only saved by grace.
Not by works, so that no man may boast.
Yeah, this line, God's desire is for us to be a people who would be distinct, yet not divided, so we would also be one.
Like the unity is unity in the gospel, right? It's not ecumenicalism necessarily with all the churches agreeing on all their finer points of theology. which I think when I hear that term, just as being around, that's always what comes to mind, though, is why is that church different than this church? We're all supposed to be one.
Churches could probably get along a lot better if we centered around Christ and not around our divisions. I mean,
Or preferences.
Yeah. I think that if a church understands the gospel and whose Jesus is, and yet they're more charismatic than we are, or more laid back than we are, or more, I don't know if you can get more laid back than we are, if they're more conservative than we are in dress or speech or tone, it's all fine. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we center around Christ first. Because imagine all these arguments we have, you know, and then we stand before Jesus and it's like, oh yeah, you're here. How'd you make it? Rather than, wow, isn't it amazing any of us are here.
Right.
I really appreciate what you said about how like the unity isn't aspirational. It's something that we already have.
Right.
And therefore we need to defend it and protect it. And I think coming back to that as a family value, it was just a really great reminder.
I swear I didn't write that. I got that somewhere, but I was looking all over and I couldn't find it. So.
Oh.
But I'm sure it wasn't me because it's way smarter than me.
It's very humble of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
Did you hear?
Patting on himself.
Moses was the most humble man
signed
who ever lived.
Moses.
Signed Moses. One of the questions in there is how important is unity with other believers to you?
Vitally important. I think again, if you define it, that was not us having consensus or agreement on all things. It's there is a family tie here and it is enough. It is enough to be secured in Christ. And actually, I kind of have this image that like stands out in my head. And I shared this with our GC a couple weeks ago when we were talking about family. But when we were going through the cohort last year, the GC leadership development cohort starting April 11th. one of the weeks we were doing story work and talking about like how Jesus is the hero of our story and not our testimony, but how have we been saved? How are we being saved? How will we be saved? And it was just really beautiful to kind of grow in relationship with those around us. And then I think I had stepped up to do something and I noticed like the guy next to me was like wearing an NRA hat, which you know is not like typical for the circle I run in. No offense to gun enthusiasts or whatever, but I was just like, wow, it's so cool. Like Jesus is enough. Like we love each other and we know each other's stories more and Jesus is our hero. There's a beauty in that.
Having been around a bunch of different churches across the country, having moved a couple of big moves in my life, that same idea of unity, like I've been in a bunch of different denominations and I've been able to share when some of them come to those little points of conflict. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you think about it this way, we still are still centered on Jesus. And so let's maybe be a little bit more aware that maybe we are still on the same family team, yeah, in a sense.
I think that is kind of a danger though among modern churches. It's like, we lean so heavily into branding, then it becomes kind of like sectarian, like, well, our church does, mm-hmm, you know, it is good to remember the beauty of like a capital C church.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot of these questions in parentheses at the end, it's ask others. So it's not how quickly does gentleness come to you? Well,
let me tell you
very,
I'm
very
the most quick. Gentle person who has ever lived.
So how do you encourage groups to do that in a way that is helpful?
I think knowing the stage and dynamic of your group is important. So maybe the way you engage those people will look different than the long timers, mm-hmm, so to speak. I was thinking maybe a broader way to kind of frame it is like, how have you guys seen gentleness expressed in this group? You know, what examples? That way you can kind of throw it out and let people draw on specific instances with certain people.
And I think if you have a GC who knows one another and maybe it's just them and there isn't new people there and they trust one another, that is a good place sometimes, mm-hmm, to ask those questions. Like, what do you see in me? How can I grow? You know, rather than being angry and storming out, it's like, yeah.
Students in similar veins, I think it might be important, and I'm sure many gospel communities already have this built in, but still to maybe lay the foundation of, are you in a place where you can hear this feedback?
That's a great question.
If I was to tell you how prideful you are.
It's your turn now. Let's all go after you.
Kat, Kevin, I think you are very gentle.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with other people and conflict, you seem to always err on the side of, well, let's think through and like, let's give the benefit of doubt and let's...
It's in good faith. Yeah. And is generous. Mm-hmm.
And I learned that because people were not so with me.
I'm sorry about that. Sometimes I think you're too gentle.
And I hear that. And that's something I want to work on. But then there's that piece of it where humility plays into that gentleness. Like you said, there's almost like a chain effect here where I'm like, oh, but maybe I'm not right. Maybe I don't have all the answers and I do need to take it back just a little bit and see if I...
Then you're like, no. I do have all the answers. I'm good.
It would be healthy for me to learn to be a bit stronger at times, especially when working with middle schoolers.
So what I'm hearing though is we can be too gentle, too humble. And so I can be less humble because I think I'm too humble.
Moses was the most perfect amount of humble man who ever lived.
Not too humble.
Yeah. So gentleness, you know, has that connotation of though you have the right to lash out, you don't. And you offer the most grace whenever possible, and not looking down on people who don't necessarily quote unquote deserve it, because none of us deserve it. And so it's this really encompassing word. Sometimes it gets translated as meekness, but our culture, when we hear meek, you know, we think meek as a mouse, and that's not what it means at all. There's a strength to gentleness that I don't think is readily seen or understood. Not saying your sin's okay, not saying that this thing wasn't wrong, but I'm not going to make you lower than you are because of it. And I will love you through it and call you back to the truth.
I think, Aaron, for you, the one that really jumps out, your humility on, and I hear it all the time, like we have a new couple who's coming and they're like, hey, that guy just seems authentic is, you know, the word that it comes from. But I think it stems from your humility of being secure enough in the gospel to say, I am who I am and I'm being redeemed. And it's okay to share reality because that's where grace meets the road. And I think that makes you unique as a pastor of a church.
When I talk about my wife, you know, in the ER and me being like, why do you make me sit here with all these other sick people?
Do you know who I am?
I should get special treatment. And I know that because I have a hard time with patience and long suffering and gentleness. And so it's, you know, rather than saying, hey, I got it all together.
It's probably good to talk about what these things aren't. You kind of did that with gentleness already. But humility, too, doesn't have to be self-deprecating because there is a nuance in the sense that like, we're also God's beloved. I think people have a hard time navigating that.
Right. That's the thing I keep learning all the time is that humility to me doesn't mean I'm supposed to be the doormat that everybody walks over.
Yeah.
But instead, it reminds me of Tim Keller. I think there was a whole little small
and my
book.
Ears perk up.
You had me at Tim.
Yeah, that's him. What is it? The gift of self-forgetfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or thinking of oneself less.
Right. Uh-huh. Where it's humility is just more of a thinking of others more than I think of myself. Right. I mean, yes, it's evaluating me in a healthy way, but it's not about me. It's others focused.
Pride is the filling of yourself with yourself, and humility is the filling of yourself with Christ. Mm. Keep going. You got two in.
I'll do the third. Michelle, I think for you, the one that really stands out for me, I mean, the bearing with one another in love, like you come alongside people so well. Hashtag therapist. But no.
Hashtag sin hunter.
You do. You come alongside, you care, you follow up better than anybody I know in terms of like sustained care. You're not just like a flash in the pan. Like I can be, or like, oh, I'm sorry. And then I never think about that person again. But no, you do. You really come alongside and encourage and help.
Thanks, guys.
It's in love.
But you do that too.
I love you all. Yeah, you do.
You are someone who notices people's needs and empathizes with those needs. And I think that leads to bearing each other's burdens because you don't blow it off. You think about it. You think the right way to get somebody connected to it. When for me, I mean, most of the time I'm just like, what? your mom died? What happened? Because I don't, but you notice these things. Mm-hmm. And it's a unique thing that I don't think a lot of people walk into readily.
So next week, we are actually taking a break from Ephesians. So we're going to jump back into the Not So Little Women series for Easter.
Mary Magdalene.
Mary Magdalene next week. So
who is ready to fight the gardener.
Nice.
Where'd you take Jesus?
And then we'll be back for week 12 Ephesians a week after that with a special surprise during service.
It'll be fun. So right now I've been working with some of our students to form a worship band, and they will be on the stage, and it'll be awesome. And they'll be throughout the service in other ways too. If you see our teenagers serving, this is a work of love that they have for our church as a whole.
Hey, whatever happened to your journal?
I have it. I didn't bring it today.
Okay.
I bring it to everything.
All right.
Yeah, I bring it to
just stop interrupting. I was just curious.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you, Michelle.
Yeah, I was going to use that.